Unity, the strength and the sure success.
Oh, yes.
All for one.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare. Prepare to experience another fabulous edition of the Vinny Eastwood Show, the place where you get the guests who are either A1, people you've already heard of, and they wind up cackling away and you see another side to them, or two, it's the people you've never heard of that you certainly want to hear from again. Today is the latter. His name is Ron, and I've forgotten his last name already, but comes from a company called Forever Green. And those of you out there who have children who've been vaccinated, that have experienced terrible side effects, as is the intention, of course, because as we all well know, vaccines are a deployed bioweapon that is being used on the public as we speak. You'll certainly get along with this man, especially if you understand the importance of natural health products as an alternative to bioweapons. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Thanks, Vinny. It's Ron Williams.
All right. Glad we got that one out of the way. I'd love it if you could actually introduce yourself to the audience, because you're a musician and a filmmaker, and now you're running a company called Forever Green. This is quite an interesting progression. I'd like you to explain to me just how that happened.
Well, I think the old school, Vinny, was when we kind of got pigeonholed into one idea or one thought, and then like it or lump it, we would have to do it the rest of our lives. But I think we're moving into a business era of inspiration, no longer manipulation, no longer motivation, but true inspiration. And when you do that, crazy things can happen, because we start living our truths, we start pursuing our passions. And in this case, you know, I've always had a passion for music, for communication, and so I did a film. The film won several international film festivals, and Jessica Biel has become a spokesperson for the movie, and I've written some books as a form of expression, and again, empowerment, not to be the voice, but be one voice that's being heard. Very passionate about health, because I think that too many people are stepping over their health, thinking they're going to create and sustain their dreams, only to come up short, or hopeless, or cynical, or fear or survival, and we see that everywhere today.
The real point there is they're thinking about fulfilling their dreams and not actually just going ahead and doing it.
Yeah. We always ask the question, are you a lazy visionary, or are you blind and busy? And so the whole idea is to be passionately engaged in what your vision is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you look for in good employees and good friends. Somebody who's passionate about what they do. It doesn't matter about their qualifications, their experience, or whatever, because those things are absolutely irrelevant. A piece of paper from university, it has nothing to do with your work aptitude. But if you love something, boy, oh boy, do you go the extra distance. Those are the type of people that wind up getting ahead in life. Those are the type of people that wind up building their fortunes, building companies, enriching people's lives. The latter kind, those are the people that follow orders from evil scumbags who try to oppress you in every single conceivable way.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Vinny. From the herding mentality, where there was one dictator and a bunch of a herd that had no voice that just followed, versus the tribal mentality of people who are alive and aware and conscious. And energy doesn't lie, and you're so right. When we hire here, people always say, do we take the education or the experience? And our answer is always attitude and energy, and because it's so teachable and coachable. So right on the money.
And long off in the distance in a Utah valley, you could hear it whispering silently on the wind, Obamacare! Obamacare! You know, we talk about hilarious items like eugenics and Holocaust and genocide generally in our daily life, and, you know, have a good few laughs about it. But the reality is quite a lot more stark than I try to make it out, because, quite frankly, the truth scares a lot of people quite irrecoverably, if that's even a word, because it is like having an involuntary blue pill, or red pill, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, right now, what's happening in the healthcare world and the health world, etc., it's scaring everybody to no end. And, you know, we're finding ourselves here in America the sickest generation, the heaviest generation, and the first generation projected to outlive our children. And nowhere am I hearing in any of this discussion about health care or vaccines or prescription drugs, et cetera. Nowhere am I hearing just simple accountability where we just, the old willpower, the old timeless principles of health that if Mother Nature made it, eat it. If man made it, leave it alone or eat it in moderation. And so, you know, I'm not hearing that. So I find that most intriguing that we're not targeting probably the greatest answer, and that is just getting back to some timeless principles. No more do me quick trends that fix you overnight, but really kill you in the end. So there's a lot going on here in our country right now.
Well, it comes into the mind that if there's an industrial process in the line here, it's called the pharmaceutical industry. They're producing copious quantities of pills which millions upon millions of dollars of research have gone into. And by research, we mean twiddling around and testing patients and subjects who have copious quantities of terrible, debilitating, and sometimes side effects that they can't even recover from that change them forever. And then, before they've actually done double-blind tests and anything that would scientifically prove their worthiness, they get approved by panels of psychiatrists who have between 1 and 14 financial connections to the psychiatric industry.
No, you are so right on that one. And so, you know, we're being marketed to. We're a bunch of laboratory animals here, losing our voices, losing our minds. And so it's really a time to be counted one person at a time. The world is never going to change in a broad stroke, but rather millions of small strokes from people like the hands of you and me and people. I've been researching a little bit, Vinny, what you've been up to and how you started with your connection to the autistic world. And, of course, you know, you and I both have something in common there. And just some of the connections that are being made to pharmaceuticals, to vaccinations. And as you said, no long-term science, just these quick-hit business proposals that are being proposed via the media. And so it's getting more and more confusing, but I think at the same time, it's becoming more black and white, thank goodness. The gray area is starting to leave. That's at least one step in the right direction.
Yeah, well, people have forgotten that if just because somebody's on a radio, just because somebody's on a TV screen, doesn't mean they're any different from you or me. All right? That's the thing. They are just as easily manipulated. They are just as easily dumbed down as the rest of us are. Okay.
Yep.
Some of us choose not to be slaves and choose to think independently and try to question things. Others, on the other hand, accept things passively. And as long as something doesn't happen directly to them, they don't take action. Much like if you're witnessing huge amounts of violence next door and you don't intervene or talk to the people afterwards or try to accomplish some resolution out to it, you don't do anything about it. Unless, of course, trouble from next door comes knocking. You've got to actually look into the future and see how things are going from what things have been done already, okay?
Yeah.
Do you think that a crazy, crazy profession like psychiatry, whose roots included Bedlam, which was a hospital in London where they locked up the mentally insane in cold cells, sometimes naked, dunked them in huge bowls of cold water that while they were attached to chairs that had spikes on them. You know, they basically just tortured people. That's all of that psychiatry really is. It's just a form of torture by some people who are tinkering around in your mind trying to figure out what makes you tick. And by golly, they have found a lot of things that make us tick. And they use it against us to enrich themselves and to kill people off.
Oh, you're so right. It's becoming chemical warfare and less hands-on. So, I mean, I've sat on thorny chairs and dunked myself in cold water just having fun, but never as a form of treatment. but yeah, it's a very good point. And, I mean, you look at the influence that's being spread around right now you know, sometimes in the United States, and I don't want to sound like I'm in the bubble of any kind of superiorism, but unfortunately, the United States makes a lot of quick fix approaches to a lot of things, and we tend to lobby those things around the world. And, you know, it's time that everybody wake up and just be heard and take a stand for what's more timeless, what's more real, what's more sustainable, if you will. And this is a good time to do that. So I really appreciate your show for the things that you bring to the table.
Well, and I appreciate you for what you bring to the table. And I see my show as the table itself, really.
Absolutely.
So that everybody can see what's on it, you know?
Yeah.
Feast your ears, ladies and gentlemen, to the rhythmic sounds of the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Yeah. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Now, we talk about solutions, right, all the time, and every conversation has to enter into the solution stage. And I think it's pretty early on in the piece, but we're going to go ahead with it anyway. My opinion is that all the mechanisms that have been enslaving us would probably tie into three categories: business, politics, and media. Okay, those would be the top three categories, as far as I'm concerned, as public institutions that need to be taken back very quickly in order to exert dominance over the New World Order folk in terms of their influence in this country. So one of us is trying to go on the media platform. That would be me. And you're trying to go up on the business platform. How do you conduct business to the way, say, a New World Order person would conduct business?
Well, it's a good question. You know, we try to do business in a very conscious way. You know, it's been said that mothers, and I, you know, this is just things that I've heard and opinions that I think are very interesting to talk about, that mothers have a big influence on children, love on this planet. You know, they're sort of the source of the soil of love, if you will. And knowing that, I think CEOs are sort of the mothers of the business world, that there's an opportunity for a CEO to create a company with a conscience, a company that actually makes the world better by simply being in business and employs people, and it just makes a good, honest living. And so what we try to do is we make our business model we're actually committed to our business model being something that affects mankind in a positive way. So when we even opened our doors, Vinny, we told all of our employees once a month, go to lunch, never come back. And we tell them that, and it sounds like a small thing, and it is. It's a small random act of kindness, but what we do is we ask each of them to find something in the community that is completely outside of themselves where they can go hands-on, make a difference in the world. Now, in addition to making a difference in the world, I think they establish a lot of gratitude within themselves for the things that they do have in our lives, and gratitude is the soil of positive movement. In addition to that, sometimes we think the world is some intangible thing out there that we can't touch, when in fact the world is always here and now, and you and I can change the world every single day. So number one, it's about conscious. Number two, the products that we've chosen to market are not any trends or any quick fixes. I don't think that there's any health trends that are for real. Our health is as timeless as the sky is blue. So we kind of chosen timeless principles of health, timeless principles of humanity in our business modeling. Now, interestingly, we're a publicly traded company. Ah, there's a new wrinkle in the model. So it enables us to do a business in a very transparent way, in a way that everyone can take ownership in something like this and have a voice in something like this. But at the same time, you know, be commerce, feed the economy, do good things, and stand for those things that I think are needed. But everywhere you look, on nearly every street corner here in the United States at least, you know, it's quick fix, it's quick fix, it's quick fix. And I cannot see us making any improvements with that kind of modeling.
Well, you know, what's funny is that the people who are proposing the quick fix are actually running on a really long time frame, and they're getting us to buy into the idea of a quick fix, and we're the ones who should be thinking on a long time frame, okay? When you're thinking about healthcare, you need to think about taking care of your health. As in your health, it's not anybody else's. Nobody else has ownership over it, but you. You choose whether or not you pull into Wendy's. You choose whether or not you get a small fries or a large fries. You choose whether or not you brush your teeth with fluoride. You choose whether or not you drink fluoride in your water. And, well, to a certain extent, possible. I mean, there's plenty of it's basically impossible, I would probably say, to not get poisoned in any given day by various poisoning measures.
Yeah.
No matter how aware you are.
No, I completely agree with you. I don't know if you saw the study. You'll love this. Study was performed by a bunch of scientists where they pulled the umbilical cords of approximately 100 newborn children. Have you heard this study?
No, but it sounds like it was conducted in Nazi Germany in 1938.
No, actually, it's fairly recent. But what they did is they wanted to find how many synthetic chemicals they could find in the umbilical cord. And they found about 247 foreign chemicals and 217 cause cancer and or nervous system disorders. And they're saying that whether it's air, water, personal care products, household cleaning products, food, diet, that these things compounded over time are going to have their effect on our health. I tend to be a little more liberal myself that, look, you know, a day of junk food, a week of junk food, a month of junk food, even a year of junk food may not be that good. But compounded over a long period of time, it'll kill us, you know, is what'll happen. So I believe in the moderation approach. Live a little. Don't be afraid. What you resist persists. So I'm just not a guy who's too afraid of these things. But I think that, you know, if you look around, it's about being educated and just knowing the choices you're making first and foremost. Most people don't even know what's behind the curtains.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say? The response to the toxicity of fluoride argument, for example, they say, mm-hmm. it's only one part per million. How can that do much to you? You know, okay. if you drink too much water, it can kill you. But you know, fluoride. Look, bro. Seriously, mm-hmm. have you heard of interacting factors, okay, as in more than one poison, more than one chemical affecting you at the same time? Just got shown on mainstream television last night here in New Zealand that pesticides on their own may not be that dangerous, but if you combine it with another pesticide, they become even more dangerous than ever before, okay? Mm-hmm. There are so many conflicting factors, influences, and little poisonous chemical interactions that we have in our daily lives, and that all gets passed on down a younger generation. And I'd probably say that's part of the reason why this younger generation is a shorter lifespan than ours.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Ron Williams from Forever Green, and we'll be right back after this very short break. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and join us in the Vinnie Eastwood Show Facebook group as well. Back in a moment. The David Rockefeller theme song. The godfather of globalism, David Rockefeller himself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'd like to promote some eugenics on you. And I'd also like to give your kids some vaccines. To give them debilitating diseases and terrible side effects that will last their entire existence. So that you have to keep coming back to my medical corporations for the cure, which will never cure nothing, and I'll keep raking in your money.
Thank you very much, David Rockefeller, for that special appearance.
You're welcome.
Love it.
Yeah. Godfather mofo. I find it quite disgusting, in fact. How long did it take, really? I mean, for the entire American business community, in the higher up levels, of course, to go from very honest, decent, hardworking, honorable people to basically the most ruthless, backstabbing scum with absolute no respect for humanity. How long did that take? 100 years? 200 years?
Well, what we did, no, I'm just kidding. That's a good question. I wish I could document it as far back there because I wasn't alive there. And we always would like to think that our father or grandfather or forefathers did things in a stand-up way. But I think from just looking at pictures and reading, I think it was in the 1930s, 1940s when things started getting just really weird, and from what I've read. And from that point on, it was downhill.
Oh, goodness sake. Well, what did they introduce in the 1930s and 40s? I know, a world war, a UN, and freeze-dried food.
And the prohibition against hemp.
Oh, how incidentalist, you know. And again, it's a combination of factors, just like having 200 foreign chemicals in your...
yeah, exactly.
in your what is that called? Some kind of a chord. But that speaks back to me is that we're born poisoned and we die poisoned, and the only difference is while we're alive and what kind of things that we take to relinquish said poisoning.
Yeah, I think the body is a self-healing mechanism, and it will perform miracles by the minute when we honor and edify the intelligence. The way we do that is we give it the proper raw materials. And so, unfortunately, the world is filled with foodless foods and lifeless drinks. Our children think they're health nuts when it says 10% juice on their candy. And when they think they're eating fruit, it's marketing of Fruit Loops or Apple Jacks or Crunch Berries or things like that. And so we just got to get back to what's real. And there is a movement in the United States of conscious business. There's a movement of timeless principles of health and very high quality movement. It's just we need it to be a lot bigger, a lot faster, and to kind of turn back the hands of time a little bit.
Well, how do you turn back the hands of time in a real sense? I mean, I know people who are like 60, 70 odd, and they look 40, 50. And the interesting thing is that they just eat real food. That's patently the only difference that I see. If you want to be real healthy, eat real food.
Yeah, science is never going to compete with nature. It's so funny. We go into the grocery store and we're looking for packaging, and we go find a can of corn or a can of carrots or a can of something. These cans are just caskets. They're basically cooked foods that have cooked the life out of them. They put them in these embalming fluids right there in the casket tin can. They put packaging on there. So we're up and down the aisles looking to see what picture we like the most. If you want to see packaging, go to the produce section. Who packaged that? Who made those bright colors? Who made those bright flavors? Who made the different textures and the shapes and sizes and forms? And we call those signature foods. Why, when you cut a carrot, does it look like an eye? Or why does the walnut look like a brain? You know, why does a tomato exactly replicate the inner workings of a heart?
And why does a banana have a distinctive curve in it? But go on.
Yeah, I know where you're going. And the kiwi, it is round, fuzzy, and full of seed. Okay, enough said. So the whole point is that is it nature is nutritionally complex, so we don't have to do. The 70s, the 80s, and 90s, they tried to kill us, telling us that we can neutralize bad behavior by chasing our junk food down with synthetic multivitamins, which are nothing more than just toxic. Health is a habit. It's not an event. It's not a handful of supplements on a Saturday morning chased by a frothy green drink. That's not health. And I think that's how we got ourselves in this mess, is we wanted to believe that.
Now, we talked about the illegalization or the prohibition of cannabis hemp weed, which previously, up until I think it was 1933, that was a completely legal, and everybody used it to basically make everything. They used it to make their soaps, their shampoos. They used it for animal feed. They used it to make their clothing. They used it to make their sails. They used it to make their paper, everything. And then it just became illegal. And it was interesting you said that it was around the 30s that that American business and everything just kind of went down, and partly because of the hemp thing, because suddenly everybody being able to be responsible for themselves by growing the Indian hemp weed and creating all these materials from it without any monetary input whatsoever, as long as there was sunshine, they could do it. all of a sudden, they're freaking slaves and they have to buy everything from everybody else.
That's a really good observation, Vinny. I think that, hemp was the first crop ever mentioned in a billion-dollar conversation because of the versatility that you just mentioned. Whether it's energy, whether it's biofuels, whether it's clothing, whether it's hats, underwear, socks, food, nutritional things, paper, tissue paper, all these things. It's such a wonderful, wonderful plant. And so what happened was, what's interesting is you turn on the news today, and I won't mention any news networks, but it's about a bank, it's about an oil company, it's about a disease, and it's about bloodshed. And if you really were to break that down and you were to put hemp in that equation, you really wonder what we could have avoided. You know, again, hindsight's 20/20, but what could we have avoided by simply embracing the versatility of this plant and what it provides? We'd probably be way further down the road of what else it could provide. But it's making its comeback right now at a time when our economy is hurt, at a time when the health is down, at a time when the environment is absolutely raped. Now this hemp is making a comeback. And so we're, as a company, we're doing all we can to educate, market, create solutions, if you will, in the area of environment, in the areas of health, and in the areas of economy. And so we've created a brand, and it's doing quite well. In fact, some of the largest hemp manufacturers in the world are now contacting us because we're growing faster than any of them are, because we figured a way to market it and educate people in a way that there's no resistance.
Well, that's your interesting point there about marketing, is that, you know, you can use it for good or for ill. And this is the thing. We've got so many people who have great ideas out there who are very, very good people, but they're not marketers. They don't know how to market worth a dime. Essentially, that it doesn't matter how good their idea is then, because nobody's going to hear about it.
Well, you have a lot of what I call fanatics, and fanatics like to tell everybody what they know, and in the process, they repel everyone they talk to. You know, the measure of one's leadership is moving somebody from point A to point B. If you smoked two packs of cigarettes yesterday, let's see if we can get you down to a pack and a half today. And so my whole methodology is acceptance. It's about loving people. It's about moving them from where they're at, not being a fanatic and just drawing a big line between me and that person. So marketing is nothing more than just really communicating to all walks of life in an accepting fashion. And so the way we do it is we just educate. You know, you Google hemp, and unfortunately paraphernalia comes up, and you Google cannabis sativa, and unfortunately more paraphernalia comes up. So we had to end up making up a name to get around the propaganda of industrial hemp, and we made up a name called Versativa. And in doing so, wow, we've just attracted every walk of life, the educated to the uneducated, to Silicon Valley, to hippies, to the younger generation, and even the older generation who remember hemp. And so in doing so, we've been able to create quite a movement with the message around hemp.
Well, there you go. And what do those products from hemp actually accomplish, I mean, in the lines of products that you sell?
Right now, we're just nutritional, starting out nutritional, but we are right pioneering a few things regarding clothing, shoes, shirts, socks. We're also doing some tissue products that I'm kind of sworn not to deliver yet, because I don't want to say it before we have it. But we're going to do a product in such a way that no trees are ever taken from the earth, and we're going to do a very responsible line of tissue products. So it's fun. It's almost done, and it's taken quite a long time to get it to the point we're at. But we're going to do it without using trees and raping the environment. In fact, in a biodegradable approach.
Well, would you conceive of helping to create like a global mega corporation that takes all their hemp and everything like that and produces really good, high quality products at a cheap price, and then just completely beat out all the other competition from U.S. countries contracted to China and whatnot? Bring the jobs
home? It's a good point. You know, what's happening is, you know, America is the number one importer of hemp, yet we're the only industrialized country that I know of that can't grow it. And so as a result, it creates a lot of interesting scenarios of how this whole program can work. But what we're trying to do is bring the truth to the forefront here on our homeland first and foremost. That's where we live. Also provide it for everywhere around the world. And so be careful what you wish for. We just started with this idea just as a thought. But because of our prowess, you know, our abilities, I guess, in the marketing and the passion, the movement, the inspiration, the biggest hemp companies in the world are now really trying to hitch their wagons to us. And so I think the fair way to do it is, like you mentioned, is to try to create this global resource, if you will, and allocate it appropriately so that it's available everywhere to stimulate either economy, health, environment, all these kinds of things. If we can gauge the entire world in this conversation, obviously, we've done a good thing. We have a ways to go.
Well, you know, there's always a ways to go. And like the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML, has been around for, 30, 40 years or so? And what have they achieved?
Yeah, exactly. It's good.
The dead silence right there, you see? You can't think of a single thing, which leads me to believe that whatever they're doing, they're not doing anything worthwhile. Okay, so there really has to be a revitalization. And again, like I was talking about, those three pillars of society, business, media, and politics. You know, seriously, the systems that we have currently in place are absolutely irrelevant to the journey of mankind. Okay, they don't do us any good. Okay, they're terrible. We're better off not having a psychiatric industry compared to what it actually is. We're better off not having healthcare compared to the fact that it's the third leading cause of death. It's pretty terrible out there. So whatever's going on, and this of course applies to a lot of things, but we specifically mentioned cannabis here. Whatever is being done to resist the current model ain't working, because what they're doing is resisting the current model. They're not actually creating a new one at all. They're saying, oh, well, you know, this is really bad. It's terrible. And it's just like, well, come up with an idea then. Okay, we have come up with ideas. We need to legalize it, regulate it. We need to have this guy as a cottage industry, et cetera, et cetera. But you've got to actually implement it first. And the reason why I wanted to focus on this today is because I've just had some very bad news. The very first cannabis cafe in New Zealand was called The Dactory. In New Zealand, the local is called Dak. And they've got it in a factory, so it's the Dak factory, The Dactory. You know, it's got a cute name. And it's just been confirmed that it is going to be closing after 2 years in operations, because last year when it was raided, the proprietor of The Dactory, Dr. Green, is now going to go to jail most likely. And so the whole foray into trying to get cannabis legalized by actually creating a real cannabis cafe in New Zealand failed. In my opinion, it's because they weren't marketing it properly, and it wasn't really getting out into the community. Okay, it was just ordinary people doing ordinary things, and it didn't appear hugely professional. And it's just like there's an awful lot of rumor that goes on with things, and people choose to stay away because it's an illegal practice, what they were doing.
Yeah, the perception, that's the problem. And if you're not good at, I don't even want to use the word good, if you're not conscious of what the perception is, how are you going to communicate to the masses? And so if you're going to put marijuana leaves all over the front window, then obviously you're pretty much limiting who's going to walk through the front door. And people need to be educated. They need to be done it in a way that you can talk to everybody and give them the opportunity to learn the beauty of this plant. I had the privilege of going to Canada, because right above the American border, they're growing tens of thousands of acres of this cannabis, this industrial hemp. And so I'm talking to the farmer, and this was quite a revealing interview, when he explains just the willpower of the plant, hemp, you're inspired. He says, you know, when we grow strawberries or when we grow corn or blah, 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 if it snows, it ruins our crops. And, you know, he says, not hemp. He says, if it snows, it doubles its size. It grows up too, and it just pops through the snow like nothing happened. And so this is a plant that won't be denied. And somehow we've got to communicate it better than a Volkswagen van and a marijuana leaf. We've got to do it justice, is what I'm saying. And so we're consciously giving that effort right now. I think some days we're better than others, but it's working.
Well, I think you kind of touched on a point there. Being a cannabis activist, you've got to look very credible. And quite frankly, cannabis activists look like cannabis activists, don't they?
They do. You're so right there, Vinny.
You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest from Forever Green is Ron Williams. Wonder why he named it Forever Green. We'll get into more of that after the break on the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Back in a moment. Yeah, there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to hide. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. You can't run from us, because we will find you. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and he's a painter. And what he does is he loads all the Vinnie Eastwood Show episodes up to his iPod, and then he just listens to them while he's painting houses.
Pretty colorful.
Yeah. There's another guy, he loaded them all up to his iPod. Man, I'm advertising iPods like crazy today. And he drove up from Wellington to Auckland, which is like a nine-hour drive, and managed to go through a few, something like five or six episodes. And it's just like, whoa, there's some dedication.
There is.
Yeah. Well, and again, about marketing, when I do the audio archiving for the show, I'm doing like seven or something, sometimes different versions of the same archive, varying qualities and sizes and cuts, etc. Because you've got to be able to give a copy to the affiliates with some advertising in it. You've got to give an upload to the website that's free of ads. You've got to do two separate hours for the podcasting, and you've got to do one with all the music taken out for a publication to YouTube so that it goes out on multiple platforms all at once. And that's the idea, really, when it comes to marketing or getting something from a product. You've got to get as much out of it as you possibly can, which is what I think is very interesting about Versativa and all the Forever Green line of products, like the energy shots. They were very interesting. Tell us about those.
Well, you know, a lot of these energy things, especially, and I don't know how it's going out there in New Zealand, but I know in the United States, our children are simply just overdosing on these really highly synthetic drinks. And so these things don't give you energy. They just borrow life from your future is really all they're doing. And so we want to do a responsible version of an energy drink using nutrients and really make sure that it works, though, not just talk about it, give it a good story, give it a good product. And so we created a product called Electrifier. And I got to tell you, it works quite well. And it gives you this sustained, I call it mental stamina, but not that real shaky energy type of thing. So it's been pretty nice.
Well, that's what I find really strange, is that people have grown up with frickin' Red Bull thinking they need that to get their energy levels up, and they don't realize that Red Bull comes from a lot of natural extracts like guarana and whatever, but they don't put them in decent quantities. They just make it all up with artificial caffeine and whatever. But if you had hardcore or all of these really great sort of herbs and spices and whatnot that actually give you energy, you get way more, and it lasts for longer, and you don't crash.
It's sustainable. You sleep better at night. You wake up refreshed when you do it the right way. When you do it the wrong way, you get the shakes, withdrawals, food cravings, depressed, mental disorders. You name it, that's what comes with the abuse of the generic, I guess, synthetic energy crazes.
Well, speaking of crazes, what about crazy ravers? I mean, could you market the Electrifier like energy shots to like rave parties and stuff like that? Could people dance all night on that kind of stuff? That'd be something that I think would really, really help to blend movements with popular culture. That's what I'm interested in, is bringing those three pillars of society: politics, media, and business closer together in the truth sense of it. Because in the current way of things, they do work together, except they work together against the common humanity. And I think that we really need to blend them back together to help them distort the vision of the bad people, and to basically just take it back.
Oh, I agree with you. I think if we can get away from compartmentalizing our lives, where this is how I'm at work, and this is how I'm at home, and this is how I am when I'm driving my car, and this is how I'm at the mall. If we can just be like one people, you know, one goodness, if you will, and it goes into politics, business, and media, and all these things, I think that would be, obviously an ideal utopian type of society. But unfortunately, all these agendas permeate. It's all based on money and power. And we've just got to undress that with just goodness and kindness, and masses of goodness and masses of kindness, not one or two here or there. Don't brag about being poor and pure. You know, take on life in its fullest and be abundant and be influential, and don't apologize for that. But there's a way to do it, you know, in good conscience. And I think that I love that your show is really bringing to light these kinds of things.
Well, you know, when a lot of people, they try to do some good for humanity, they refuse money, they refuse success and all of that kind of stuff as if it's a bad thing, they say, and to justify it, they say, oh, money can't buy happiness. And to that I say, well, neither can poverty.
No, you're exactly right. You know, I heard a guy the other day say to me in a business meeting, he goes, you know what? When I have a toothache, I want to know that I have money. When I get a flu, I want to know that I have money. And when he was going through just the most mundane things in life, and he was saying, when I go through these things, I do want to know that I do have money to take care of my children or to do the things in life that I'm really passionate about, because money doesn't make one whole. In fact, more the other. It's like alcohol. It reveals the one's true character. But I'll tell you what, it's a powerful, beautiful tool when it's in the right hands.
Well, you know, and I find it's funny when some people, when they make a lot of money, you talk about the right hands, but what about when it gets into idle hands, okay? People who, I don't know, is there a natural progression with people and success sometimes? Is that when people don't value their success, when they don't know the value of a dollar, and they all of a sudden get given a whole bunch of it, they start to become really irresponsible? And they start spending up large, and they start risking whole huge amounts. They start doing debauched things, buying really expensive, very nice cocaine. And and goodness knows what. And then for some reason, they all decide, hey, you know what the best place for me would be? Wall Street.
you know, that is such a, that's really good that you said it the way you said it. You're so right. And, you know, what's funny about money is I was raised really poor, and I've been pretty blessed. I've been able to earn millions of dollars, and I've been able to share a good portion of that. And I don't say that because we're on the air. It's just what I'm passionate about doing. But I'll tell you this, you can tell when somebody comes from poverty to money, because they don't just buy one of everything that they like. They have to buy two. And it was one of the stupidest lessons I got to learn in my life is, I'll take two. But at a certain point, I realized I was sitting on my couch. I had money. I was idle. And I was golfing. And I just thought that, you know, that was the life. It was money and freedom. And I just got to learn that that was nothing more than a taker's mentality. There's something beautiful about being productive and active and having purpose in our lives. And fortunately, I got to learn that lesson. I didn't end up on Wall Street, thank goodness. But I can tell you that that there's a lot of people very idle with money who are just taking from society, and there's so much good to be done. And there's a lot of people who just tuck their money away and they hoard it, and they never live it. They never live any kind of life.
You know why? It's because the reason they did what they did is they did it for the money. They didn't do it because they wanted to do it.
Good point.
All right, that's what makes them not appreciate their money, is that because they don't know what to do with it. They just want it. And maybe, is that the tool that is used on people who become really bright and know how to make it? Is that the tool that they use? Because they'll teach people how to make heaps of money. And sure, you know, if you want to go out and be a currency trader or a currency traitor, as I call them in the case of my Prime Minister, John Key, who was on the board of the Federal Reserve for 2 years and was Merrill Lynch's representative for derivatives and currency trading. Mm-hmm. No small part played in the massive financial crisis that we've still yet to suffer the full effect of, or even still yet to suffer even a smidgen of the effect that is to come from. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, and in this economy, in this type of structure, the real concern that I have is people really are being taught that money is the only thing of value. So what's going to happen to society once all the money gets sucked out of it as the economy gets imploded by controlled demolition? Okay, that's what I want to know, because if we've got a bunch of criminals walking around, running the country, making all the money, making all the lies and promises and profits that they can't share or keep, what's going to happen?
Well, the demographic of rich will change its description, and we'll find out who's really rich and who's not. And so it's one of the things that I appreciate about New Zealand, and I tell people this all the time, is that there are certain principles that New Zealand has basically, I don't know if these were, I assume they were conscious decisions, but there were certain principles that New Zealand decided to stand by. and they weren't willing to trade in these principles for economic stimulus or power in the areas that weren't necessary. So I've always honored and respected that about the Kiwis and their approach. At the same time, I got to say to you, I've been there several times, and I'm so used to being so busy, I found it hard sometimes to relax as much as they do in certain areas of New Zealand. But, you know, it's finding that balance and just, you know, figuring that out. And it might be different for every single one of us, but I sure do love New Zealand.
Well, I love New Zealand too, which is why I hate it. Because it was interesting, you talked about how we like stood on principles, and I presume you were talking about the nuclear-free issue. Mm-hmm. Did you know that during the during those years of nuclear-free New Zealand, which we're supposedly still going through, not less than 20 shipments of yellow cake uranium got shipped through New Zealand ports from Australia?
Oh my goodness.
It is just like every belief structure that you ever have in any country, doesn't matter which area of the world it is, I could guarantee you there's probably a dark underlining beneath that glossy veneer of propaganda and 100% pure New Zealand. Because the reality is, although they say that there's 40 times as many sheep per person, I reckon there's just 41 times as many sheep. Take us to the slaughterhouse.
Well, then educate me then. What about the food chain? I've always heard it was a pretty clean food chain.
We'll get into the more of that after the break. You're listening to the New Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. Back in a moment.